10 v. Gonzalez. Mr. Bardavid.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, my name is Joshua Bardavid. Along with Theodore Cox, we're co-counsel for petitioner Mr. Chen. An asylum applicant is permitted to have considered a successive and untimely application for asylum considered by the board or an immigration judge based on material changes to his personal circumstances. This is clear. This is directly from USC 1158A2D. The government and the board's assertion that the motion to reopen standards are additional standards that an asylum applicant must overcome or meet in order to have this application considered finds no support in the statute or regulations and is directly contradicted by the Department of Justice's own statements when they publish the regulations that are relevant to successive asylum applications. Lest there be any doubt, I would quote directly from the Federal Register, which is contains the Department of Justice's own statements. And in addition to the quote that was provided in our brief,
I don't think your position makes a lot of sense, because it suggests that the alien can, you know, take his time, spend years creating these personal change of circumstances, marriage, children, and so on, completely ignoring the 90-day requirement for reopening. It bypasses that and, as I say, creates opportunities for manufacturing grounds for remaining here. I just don't, that doesn't seem sensible.
Well, Your Honor, first, respectfully, I would assert that that would be an issue for Congress to address, but Congress has chosen to provide this as an opportunity.
What Congress has done. So if you think there's some logic to it, I'd be interested. If you think it's senseless and Congress just stumbled, well, that's a position too. But I wondered if this made any sense.
Certainly, Your Honor, and respectfully, we do assert it makes sense for a variety of reasons. The first is that, in fact, we're not asking for this court, and we don't claim that the law states that they're entitled to asylum. But what the law states is that they're just entitled to a review.
How does that sort with the 90-day deadline?
Well, just first, if I can complete in terms of the making sense, responding to your first, Your Honor.
That's the same question.
Yes, Your Honor, and that is a recognition of the U.S. obligations under the treaties that we have signed and enacted into law. And, you know, when I read the board's assertion, they dismissed our argument that this is to comply with our treaty obligations, not to deport an individual eligible for asylum who faces persecution or torture. The board dismissed this simply by stating that the conventions we cite to, the treaties that we cite to, are not self-implementing. And I kind of chuckled by that, because while that's a true statement of fact, they have been implemented into law. The 1967 protocol was enacted into law in the 1980 Refugee Act, and the Convention Against Torture was enacted into law in the 1998 Foreign Affairs Restructuring Act. So these have been enacted into law. And lest there be
any... But it's one thing to have obligations to people claiming asylum. It's another thing not to be able to establish procedures for processing such claims. Certainly you can... That's like saying, well, if someone appeals after 30 days or whatever the deadline is, he can't be thrown out of court because that would violate a treaty. That doesn't make any sense.
Correct, Your Honor, and I do...
Congress could certainly impose a 90-day limit on motions to reopen, right, without violating any treaties.
Absolutely, Your Honor, but if I may then...
The question is, what has Congress done? Why would it... Why would you think it would allow people arguing changed circumstances to ignore the 90 days?
Well, in fact...
10 years or 20 years?
Well, certainly, Your Honor, this is also would go to the matter of discretion when deciding these asylum appeals. But nevertheless, in terms of people ignoring the 90-day requirement, in fact, there is no requirement whatsoever, and the government has not cited to one, that says motions to reopen are always required to have a new application for relief. And in fact, there's numerous applications available to immigrants who have been ordered removed and do not need to file a motion to reopen. If I may cite to the regulations published in January of this year by the Department of Justice relating to applications for adjustment of status for individuals who have been ordered removed in order to comply with the First Circuit's decision in Sukkar, that a person is still entitled to proceed with an application for adjustment of status who has previously been ordered excluded, deported, or removed before immigration without having to reopen their prior asylum application or prior removal hearings. So, in fact, there's plenty of opportunities and other...
Adjustment of status, that's a separate proceeding, right? It goes to a different part of DHS.
Yes, Your Honor, but what is...
But here we're talking about changed conditions, and we have the 90-day rule, which confines the changed conditions to country conditions, and then this open-ended change of personal conditions. What sense does it have? What sense does it make? If you want to argue country conditions, you have 90 days, but if you want to argue...
Well, if I can respond, actually, to Your Honor's concern by quoting the Department of Justice and explaining the difference. And that is, one commentator suggested that the time and numerical limitations for motions to reopen should be broader than changed country conditions. The commentator asserted that IRA-IRA contains a much broader exception for individuals to apply for asylum beyond the one-year deadline, and that it is inconsistent with the statute to provide these broader exceptions if eligible applicants will be barred from applying for asylum because of the stricter motion to reopen standard. As noted, the department has decided to drop the requirement that the changed circumstances exception to the one-year filing deadline in Section 208A2 of the Act be raised only through a motion to reopen. That is in Federal Register 62-10312. I believe that the department has considered precisely Your Honor's concerns and acknowledged that, in fact, the statute does provide for an individual, based on changed personal circumstances, to at least have considered that grounds. And again, we're not talking about opening up the floodgates to any person who wants to contrive their own basis for asylum to reapply. There's many checks along the way. The first is that they have to meet the satisfaction of the Attorney General that they have changed circumstances before they even get a hearing. And then once they get a hearing, then they still have to establish it. So you have this prima facie showing.
Well, the floodgates don't go to the merits. Floodgates go to numbers, don't they? How do we cabin this approach that you suggest, Mr. Barr, David? I mean, who is this commentator that you unnamed, that you cite? I thought you were going to say this is a Justice Department position.
That was the Justice Department's response to a commentator saying that the changed motion to reopen...
That's not what the regulation says.
I'm sorry, which regulation is Your Honor referring to?
1208-4B32?
That is dealing with the motion to reopen standards, correct, Your Honor? And so what the Department of Justice is saying in this comment is, in fact, that they've dropped the requirement that an individual, in order to have a successive asylum application, have to meet the 1208B2 requirement, motion to reopen requirements.
Well, again, what would be the parameters of this? I mean, I appreciate the thrust of your argument. Where's the end point, if any? Are you going to say that there is no time limit?
Well, the end point, Your Honor, would be the exercise of discretion that the courts have, which is actually unreviewable, which is basically individuals who, first, who have met the burden of showing this prima facie eligibility to the satisfaction of the Attorney General, whatever that standard may require. Once they first have to meet that, assuming they've even met that, then an immigration judge would have the opportunity to consider all relevant factors, including how long the individual stayed in the United States. And if I can note in this specific instance, to paint Mr. Chen's remaining in the United States as that he's some sort of absconder or that some sort of nefarious act to start his family, although it's not made part of the record, Your Honor, in the Mr. Chen has filed his taxes, kept the government on notice of his whereabouts at all times, and in fact did receive a bag and baggage letter ordering him to report for deportation. This occurred after the filing of the petition for review. It's the reason it's not a part of the record. He reported as required. He was detained. The government then chose to release him on an order of supervision, which he's complied with.
Wait to these comments. Now, who filed these comments? Who signed them?
This was the Department of Justice's statements that it were published.
Who in the Justice? What division in the Justice Department?
I believe it was from the U.S. Attorney's Office. I don't know which specific division, Your Honor, but I can say this was...
What do you mean by U.S. Attorney's Office?
When they publish regulations, relate any regulations to implement statutes, there's a required notice and comment hearing. And in after the passage of IRA-IRA, this was part of the notice and comment to give practitioners in each relevant area to...
So who submitted the comments?
The comments, there were various... They don't specify who this specific commentator was, but there were always, you know, AILA, the American Immigration Lawyers Foundation.
You're talking about Justice Department comments.
Both. The Justice Department publishes...
comments. Look, you have a ruling here by the Board of Immigration Appeals, which says that the 90-day rule applies. So, you know, we're supposed to give deference, some deference, Chevron deference to their interpretations. And you're setting against that some comments by the Justice Department. So I'm curious where within the Justice, BIA is part of the Justice Department, where within the Justice Department do these comments come, since they apparently are inconsistent with this decision.
Correct, Your Honor. And I would
so
state...
Why do you take precedence?
If I can reply...
You know where they come from, right?
They're part... This is the standard procedure in...
Where in the Justice Department do they come from?
I apologize, Your Honor. I don't know specifically who within the Justice Department, but it was provided by
the... BIA is in the Justice Department, too.
Where did you find these comments?
These comments are what the Justice Department published in the Federal Register as an explanation and guidance to the regulations that were published in 1997 relating to implementing IRA-IRA. Your Honor, if I can just respond in terms of the deference due... We do have a conflicting explanation for the regulations, and in such instances, the Supreme Court has said that they're entitled to no deference at all. If I can quote, I believe it was Justice Scalia.
No, you have to know where in the Justice Department the comments come from to see whether there is a conflict with the BIA.
And, Your Honor, if I can just reply one final point, I see my time is up, but that it is not simply we're relying on the comments. We are relying on the statute and the...
The statute. Look, all this, the statute doesn't say anything about procedural limitations on applications for asylum based on changed conditions.
Correct, Your Honor.
Right? So I don't see how you get anything. You're talking about 1158. I don't see how you get anything out of 1158. Well, 1158 says, yeah, you can apply for asylum on the basis of changed conditions, but you have to comply with the regulations that govern, you know, timeliness and the like, and you only get 90 days.
Briefly, Your Honor, actually, then this statute, applying the motion to reopen standards to this statute would render this statute meaningless, meaning that an individual who is not under a final order of removal, who doesn't need to comply with the motion to reopen standards, already has the opportunity to submit a successive asylum application under 8 CFR 1003.3 and 1003.23. While under proceedings, new circumstances can be submitted to the board that were new and previously unavailable that materially affect their eligibility for asylum, which has been held to include changed personal circumstances, and that is submitted as part of the motion to remand. So the existence of this statute would be rendered entirely meaningless if a motion to reopen, the motion to reopen standards were applicable, because an individual already has the opportunity to submit based on changed personal circumstances while in proceedings. We'll reserve the remainder of our time for rebuttal. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Bar-David. Mr. Mack?
Good morning, and may it please the Court. My name is Greg Mack, counsel for the Attorney General. The court should deny the petition for review because once the 90-day period for motions to reopen has expired, there is no freestanding independent opportunity to apply for asylum. The exclusive means to apply or reapply for asylum under that circumstance is governed by the INA's provisions on reopening as well as its implementing regulations. Those authorities require an alien to demonstrate that there are changed circumstances in the country of removal. A change in personal circumstances outside of the...
How do you deal with Mr. Bar-David's argument that Section 1158 would be empty if it didn't permit this application?
I respond to that by saying 1158 tells you what. It doesn't tell you how or where. 1158 says you may apply for asylum. It doesn't tell you where, or it doesn't tell you how, it doesn't provide the timing. The Section 240 of the INA provides the where and how. Section 240 deals with removal proceedings, and it also contains the reopening provision that applies here. And when you have a board decision and you haven't had a timely motion to reopen, the INA says you can apply for asylum if you show a change in country circumstances, not a change in personal circumstances. So that is how you harmonize the 1158 provision here, or 208 in the INA, and the 240 provision dealing with the reopening provision. So 1158 says you may apply for asylum. Section 240 with respect to the reopening provision says once there is a board decision and the 90 days has expired, you can only apply for asylum.
He says that it was always possible to argue changed circumstances until you were actually ordered deported.
Well,
and so 1158 must have, or this provision of 1158 must have wanted to alter that.
Well, actually, it doesn't alter that. 1158 also deals with an administrative application for asylum that is filed wholly outside of removal proceedings. But once removal proceedings have commenced, or once removal proceedings have concluded, what you look at is where do you go to reopen those proceedings to apply for a new form of relief.
So are you saying 1150, would this be related to the one-year limitation?
It is related to the one-year, because...
So you're saying 1158 could mean that even if you hadn't applied for asylum within a year coming to the United States, if there were changed circumstances, you could apply.
You could apply to
a year, to
an administrative officer, to an asylum officer, after a year if you show extra...
You're saying that's independent of removal. You could do that because... even though no removal proceedings had been instituted or completed.
Correct. You could apply for asylum administratively before there's removal proceedings, or once you're in removal proceedings, you can apply for asylum defensively in order to avoid the order of removal. But once you're in removal proceedings and once removal proceedings have been concluded, you have to deal with the 90-day reopening period. And once the 90-day reopening period has expired, you have to deal with the motion to reopen regulation, which implements Congress's concern with finality and repose. You should not be allowed an unopened extended time.
How do you explain the comments on which Mr. Ben-David relies?
Well, that commentary seemed to have a problem with trying to harmonize the reopening statute and this new asylum language, and it left it open. Said, we're not going to address that. But you have the reopening statute, and the board cannot ignore the reopening statute. And to the court's question as to where this language comes from, the Office of Legal Counsel or Legal Policy within the Attorney General's office is the one who generates regulations, and they're signed off on by the Attorney General. Certainly the Board of Immigration Appeals is another component of the Attorney General's office, and the Board of Immigration Appeals decision here is later in time than that commentary. And in addition, that commentary was issued in March of 1997. The reopening statute and the reopening regulations were published prior to that. So you had the reopening interest and the finality interest published before that commentary. And what the Board of Immigration Appeals has done here has brought harmony to 208 or 1158 and the reopening statutes and regulation. And it says, look, and it sets out in the board's decision when you can assert personal circumstances. You can assert personal circumstances prior to the removal proceedings being commenced, or even when removal proceedings are commenced, you can assert personal circumstances. But once there's a final order of removal, and once the 90-day period has expired, you can only apply or reapply for asylum when you show a change in country circumstances. And the difference there is, the difference between changed country circumstances versus asserting personal circumstances, the change there and the distinction there and the additional restriction there is to implement the concerns with finality and repose. You are not allowed to sit on your rights and remain in the United States when you were supposed to leave the United States, gain additional equities, if you will, and then apply to the Board of Immigration Appeals and say, I shouldn't be removed because I have these new personal circumstances that don't have an impact, don't go to a changed country circumstance, and thus you have to allow me to apply for relief. That is not what the board would allow here, and the board has reasonably brought harmony to these two statutory provisions, and we would ask the court to defer to the board's interpretation here. If there's no further questions, the government will submit.
Thank you. Okay, thank you, Mr. Mack. So, Mr. Bardavid, your time expired, but we'll give you a minute if you have something.
Thank you, Your Honor. I'll be very brief. If I just may respond to the government's response to the concern that their interpretation of this would render 1158 meaningless. In fact, while they are correct that in terms of the one-year issue, there could be a circumstance where this could be applicable where a person wasn't in removal proceedings. But this statute specifically also addresses and accepts the one asylum application filing requirement. So again, Congress was considering the fact that an individual would have already filed an asylum application. So again, this would render that portion of that statute entirely meaningless. If I can also address the government's assertion that 1158 does not provide the where and how, the regulations do, and that's actually 8 CFR 208.4B small I. And that says that after the completion of exclusion, deportation, or removal proceedings, and in conjunction with a motion to reopen pursuant to 8 CFR, where applicable, the immigration court is the court that the application should be filed to. The inclusions of the word where applicable, which I believe was included at the same time they published the other regulations, clearly indicates that a motion to reopen is not always required. And again, the government has not pointed to a single statute that says a motion to reopen is always required. And in fact, they explicitly stated, not that they just left this for another day, they explicitly stated the Office of Legal Counsel that they are dropping the motion to reopen requirement to harmonize these.
I understand your first point. So you apply under 1158 after the year has passed. That's one function of 1158. Another would be file a new application. You filed one application. Now there have been changed circumstances, so you file another application.
Correct, Your Honor.
So why aren't those perfectly good reasons for 1158 that are not inconsistent with the deadline on motions to reopen?
Again, Your Honor, because an individual, 1158, the portion that accepts the one asylum application requirement, that portion would, a person would not need to benefit from 1158 if they were still in proceedings. That they would have under 8 CFR 1003.
I understand proceedings. Suppose there are no proceedings. No proceedings. The DHS hasn't caught up with them yet, but now they filed an application for asylum, which is wending its way through the system. Now there are changed circumstances, so they decide to file a second application, and their 1158 permits that.
Because the respectfully, Your Honor, actually, if an individual has filed an application for asylum and there are new and it hasn't been adjudicated yet, and there are new circumstances, the regulations provide that they're always entitled to amend that application without having to file a new application. So again, this statute clearly anticipates.
They can amend it, or they can file a new one. I mean, what difference doesn't make any difference, does it?
I think that there's no indication that Congress intended the statute to simply be duplicative, to basically grant
that. Maybe their first one has been turned down.
Then they would have to be in proceedings. The regulations require that if a person has been denied asylum and they are no longer in lawful status, then they have to be placed into proceedings. So again,
then they can file a new application. They haven't been ordered deported yet.
And they would not, once put in proceedings, they have the opportunity to have their case adjudicated before an immigration judge. And while it's before an immigration judge, 1003.23 would permit them to submit new evidence that was based on changed personal circumstances. And 1003.3 would permit them to submit the evidence to the board, having had their first asylum application already adjudicated by the immigration judge. So again, Congress is, and it would simply not create a duplicative right.
Well, of course, it frequently does.
Fair enough, Your Honor. Thank you.
Thank you very much to both counsel.